Welcome to Faculty Insight, brought to you by Harvard Extension School in partnership with ThoughtCast. I'm Jenny Atiya, and I'm speaking with Jocelyn Cesari, the director of the Islam in the West program and an associate at the Center for Middle Eastern Studies and the Center for European Studies at Harvard. She also teaches at Harvard Divinity School and Harvard Extension School. Jocelyn, you specialize in the study of contemporary Islamic society. That's a pretty touchy subject at the moment. How does this touchiness impact on your work?
Does impact every day in the sense that most of the time the topic of contemporary Islam has become a very hot ideological issue, and the way that people deal with it is, I am right and you are wrong. So it's kind of challenging. So I think that it's touchy and it affects my work in the sense that I have to produce some scholarly publications and research, but I'm not always seen in the public space under this hat, so to speak, or with this particular expertise. I'm seen with an opinion. And for me, it's kind of difficult to change this.
Well, there are opinions all over the place on this topic.
Yeah, exactly. But the point I'm trying to make here is, how can we scholars bring knowledge more than opinion in the public space? And I'm not sure this is going right at the moment.
Well, in the public space at the moment, there are a lot of Westerners who are arguing pretty loudly that Islam is incompatible with our values, our democracy. Are they wrong?
It's a good case in point. Again, if you look at the positions, behaviors of some Muslims, you can indeed think that this is the case. But what is needed is a better understanding of the diversity of Muslim groups, of individuals, or the way that they deal with culture. Of course, some Muslims, especially when they use Islam as a radical political tool, will posture themselves as enemies of democracy and Western values, secularism, democracy, progress, equality between men and women. But if you look at the way that Muslims have been acting in different contexts, it's much more nuanced and much more influenced by this Western value than they want to say it. So, you know, it's complicated.
Is Islamophobia getting in the way? Is it clouding our judgment?
Yes, absolutely. It's very recent, this rise in anti-Islamic discourse in the last year. We have seen the Ground Zero mosque controversy, the Burn the Quran Day, and more politicians becoming vocal against Islam in a way that we have not witnessed before, even after 9/11.
Why do you think this is happening now?
There are different reasons. I think the first one is Americans are more vulnerable than ever. I mean, I've been in the country before and after 9/11, and it's clear that 9/11 has affected the way that Americans see the world and how they see themselves in the world. Before that, Americans didn't really think that they were so unpopular outside. When I say we here, I put my European hat, we knew that. I mean, Europeans would not have been surprised at the same level if 9/11 had happened in Europe. You see what I mean? They would have been angry too. Or they would maybe reacted even more aggressively, but they would not have been surprised, as I've seen Americans surprised after this attack.
So perhaps we finally lost our innocence?
I would say Americans are thinking like a big island. There is an insular mentality, like the world comes to us. So, you know, how much do we have to spend time and effort to understand the world. And I think this has changed. And there have been a greater awareness of what's going on outside. Doesn't mean that it makes Americans more comfortable, and that's the point. It has made them more and more uncomfortable. And the economic crisis has even intensified this anxiety. I think what we have witnessed over the last 10 years is an increase in anxiety, a stronger confidence in the American project inside and outside. And so as I have seen in Europe, then Islam can come very easily as one of the reasons for this greater unease of American, because this anxiety, you have always to find a reason for it, you know.
Blame it on the Muslims.
Yeah, I think they're playing now, Islam is really the scapegoat of the Western, I'm going to throw a big word, but decline. I think we are at the beginning of the beginning of the decline.
Would that make Al-Qaeda happy, do you think?
I think so, yes. That's what they are aiming to. I mean, Al-Qaeda is not only against the West. I think they are against any kind of integrated, harmonious international system. It happens that Americans are leading the game now. So they are the major target.
Jocelyn, does it serve United States political purposes to demonize Muslims? And if so, why?
It depends. Nationally, it's clear that the current discourse against Islam does serve a political purpose. But I don't think that it's wise if you look at the position of the US internationally. Any kind of a demonization of Islam of this kind, even if it can serve short-term domestic or national purpose, does increase the tension with the Muslim societies. It does. And for this reason, it is kind of counterproductive in the long run. Yeah.
The United States has supported autocratic governments in the Middle East for decades to protect our access to oil. And we haven't been going around demonizing those leaders.
It's true. At the end, politics, especially international politics, it's about protecting material interest. I'm adopting a very strong realist position. But the point is that these leaders are not so strong, and that actually the connection with the West has weakened them more than we think. And one of the strategies that the West could take, and this is true for Europe and the US actually, would be to find a way to reconnect with Muslim societies or Arab societies beyond or above the authoritarian regime that that are not showing any kind of willingness to redistribute any of the support, either financial or strategic, with the rest of the population. So the point here would be to look at how, beyond the regime, can American and European find channels to connect with segments of Arab or Muslim societies.
Jocelyn, in a recent article you wrote for CNN.com, you make the point that we in the West have come to think of Islam not as a religion, but as a terrorist ideology. And yet, of course, the terrorists use the Quran to justify their actions.
Yeah, but religions and Islam is not different in this regard. They do not exist by the revealed text only. They exist by centuries of interpreters and clerics that make sense of the revealed text. I mean, if you open the Quran, you'll be very intrigued first and surprised, because there is no narrative in the Quran as such. There are lots of different positions and pieces of stories, some coming from the Bible, some even coming from the Jewish oral tradition. So there are lots of things going on there. But how do you make sense of it? And especially in the West, we have this strong vision of a beginning and an end of the story through the Bible. You don't have this in the Quran. So for the clerics in Islam, it has been always a challenge to find ways of channeling this meaning into concrete rules, prescriptions, interpretations, in different contexts. So when you hear some Muslims like Bin Laden say the Quran says, it is not true. The Quran doesn't say explicitly one thing. You can find the opposite 2 pages later. But it does serve its political purpose to ground his strategy into this sacred text, because it gives him some legitimacy. And the danger is that lots of Muslims have lost memory or track of this rich body of interpretation that is much more nuanced and rational than people can think of. And it does serve political purpose when groups and individuals get cut off knowledge or experience from this tradition. So what I'm saying is may sound a little counterproductive or bizarre, but I'm saying we need Muslims that know more about Islam.
Let's say a cleric makes a preposterous claim. Who's to tell him that he's wrong?
Usually clerics do not make preposterous claims. They are more cautious than that. The political leaders do that. And they want to look religious. Again, Bin Laden is a case in point. You look at him, you think this is one big religious leader, right? He's not. He has been continuously discredited and criticized by clerics, but he's bold, and he has also credibility coming from his own commitment or involvement. People see him as an authentic person in the sense that he left a sort of wealthy, easy life to live in a cave in Afghanistan, and he has put all his fortune in the jihadi movement. You know, so that's part of his charisma. But what he's saying is indeed preposterous. On the jihad, for example, the jihad has never been what he says it should be. In the religious tradition, the jihad is a fight between states, not between individual. You are not allowed as an individual to take a weapon and go out. If you look at how clerics have codified the jihad has to be declared by the head of the state. And also there are rules. You cannot go out and kill civilians. Civilians, religious figures, children, women are not target of this war. You cannot uproot trees. You cannot destroy a whole country. So these are the rules of jihad in the religious tradition. This is not what the current jihadi movement are doing.
So what can be done to moderate the beliefs and actions of Muslim extremists? How can they be encouraged to re-examine their own religion?
The ones who are currently in extremist movements, I doubt that they can change. But I think there is a lot to do to have Muslims in different Muslim societies be much more critical toward these extremist groups and to create more possibilities to rehabilitate this traditional Islam I'm talking about. And this is a big religious and cultural task that I do not think that the current states can take on. But I think there is a strong need here to train Muslims, to create institutions where Islam can be again a provocative thinking in the intellectual sense, can be again a discourse with different voices without getting into excommunication or killing. Muslims are very much at a moment where if you are not with me, you are against me, among themselves. So we always see the fight Islam versus the West. There is also a very strong fight going on among Muslims themselves. And there is a tendency to excommunicate, to be very violent from one faction to another. And this would be the first thing to start, to try to reconciliate different approaches without saying, I am right and then you are wrong and you're going to go to hell. And this is very difficult because I think it has to be done transnationally. It has to come from groups that have position in different Muslim countries, but it also has to be supported internationally. And that's, I think, a very difficult way. Because it cannot be supported by the US. If it is, it will be discredited automatically.
Last question. What you're suggesting sounds fabulous, but you're also not suggesting a way in which it can feasibly be done anytime soon.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the responsibility is on Muslims at the end, I think. The West cannot change that. The Muslims have to do this job, and There are parts of the world where this has started. I think Indonesia is a very good example where you have already this kind of more balance and multiple voices coming on. Women are very important in this change. So it will happen. Muslims in the West also can play a role. Again, if they are not controlled or instrumentalized by the political powers in the West. And some of them have start to have this kind of echo and influence. But it's a slow process.
Jocelyn Cesari, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You've been listening to Faculty Insight, brought to you by Harvard Extension School in partnership with ThoughtCast. I'm Jenny Attia. Thanks for joining us.